Does the name Mary Mallon mean anything to you? Last name spelled M-A-L-L-O-N, Mary Mallon. Probably not. I couldn't have told you who she was specifically just recently. She was born in 1869 and died in 1938. She was born in Ireland. Immigrated to the United States when she was 15 years old. She worked as a domestic servant. She worked as a cook for a string of wealthy families in the eastern part of the United States. She's actually known much more commonly as Typhoid Mary. She was the first person identified in the United States as an asymptomatic carrier of typhoid fever. That just simply means that while she carried the typhoid virus or bacteria, I'm unclear about all of that, she herself did not have the fever, but she infected other people. She had that, the virus or whatever in her gallbladder, and she was working as a cook for wealthy families, and everywhere she went, the families would start coming down with typhoid fever. Don't know how many people actually were infected by her. A number of people were known to have died from typhoid fever. But she would change jobs frequently. And so it was difficult to determine what exactly was going on until a medical researcher began to follow the trail and realized that she was the common element. She was asked to give urine and stool samples to try to determine if she was in fact a carrier of typhoid fever, and she refused. She was confident that she was not sick, and she wasn't responsible for anybody else being sick. Eventually, she was quarantined, one time for 3 years. They finally let her out of quarantine because she promised that she would no longer work as a cook. She would find some other kind of service, and she began to work as a person with laundry. She couldn't make much money that way, so she moved again and started working as a cook again, and you can figure out what happened. She spent the last 23 years of her life under forced quarantine by public health authorities who had become certain that she was the one who was infecting everyone with typhoid fever. When she died, they did an autopsy, and sure enough, she was a carrier of typhoid fever. It is fortunate for us that the contact that we have with others usually doesn't leave us with some deadly physical disease. But we will definitely be influenced by others. And this morning I want to talk to you about influence. I want to talk to you about the way that others talk and the influence that that can have on us. I want to talk to you about the way that others dress and the way that they act. And all of this can have a profound effect on our speech, on our dress, on our behavior. Are we helpless against the influence, the bad influences that surround us in this ungodly world that we live in? This morning I want to talk about the story of Joash, King Joash, or he's sometimes called Jehoash. I'm going to call him Joash for short. And I want to talk to you about his story. His story is a sad story, related in 2 Chronicles, the 22nd chapter through the 24th chapter. That's the text that we'll use this evening, or this morning rather. And his story is likewise told in 2 Kings 11 and 12. The 2 Chronicles account is a fuller account, and so we'll use that account for our text. I want to talk about his story with particular attention paid to the influences that he fell under during his life. But more than anything, I want to encourage us, all of us, to consider who it is that's influencing us and whom we are influencing. Now, the fact of the matter is, that's a pretty broad subject. We could spend our entire time this morning just talking about the influence that we have on others. But this morning, I really want to focus more on the influence that others are having on us. We'll say some about both, but I want to focus on more who is influencing us. You may remember the story of Joash, the boy king. His story is interesting in that his father, Ahaziah, actually, from the southern kingdom, visited Jehoram in the northern kingdom. And while Ahaziah was visiting his relative Jehoram in the north, he was assassinated by Jehu, part of God's punishment of the northern kingdom. And when Ahaziah was killed by Jehu, when Ahaziah's mother, Athaliah, found out about it, she did something that you wouldn't suspect is the normal behavior for grandmothers. She rounded up all of Ahaziah's sons, except one who was hidden from her, and she killed all of them. Athaliah was the daughter, as we'll see in just a few moments, of Ahab and Jezebel. And so you can guess that her moral convictions weren't very good, and so she decided she would be the next ruler. She eliminated other claimants to the throne, with the exception of the infant Joash, who was hidden by his aunt, the sister of Ahaziah, and her husband, Jehoiada. And they hid this infant child in the temple for 6 years. That was probably a great hiding place. It'd probably be the last place Athaliah would frequent, would be the temple of the Lord. And so here's this child who for 6 years is hidden away in the temple, and in the 7th year, the high priest Jehoiada arranged for Joash to be installed on the throne, and for Athaliah then to be executed. So he engineered a coup, if you will, but he put the legitimate king on the throne and removed Athaliah as queen, executing her. And change came to the southern kingdom. On the same night or the same day, at least very quickly, the house of Baal that Athaliah would have worshipped in, she was the daughter of Jezebel, a worshiper of Baal, Phoenician princess, it was torn down. And the priest of Baal, a fellow by the name of Matan, was killed. There was a covenant made between Jehoiada and the people and the king, new king, 7-year-old Joash, and they were going to serve the Lord. The Bible summarizes Joash's reign. He reigned for a rather lengthy period of time, 40 years, in 2 Chronicles 24 and verse 2, in this way, "And Joash did what was right in the eyes of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest." Later on in his reign, he obviously is under the tutelage, the guidance of the high priest probably, Jehoiada, when he becomes king because he's 7 years old. But when he becomes king in his own right and he's an adult, he arranges for repairs to be made to the temple. And in 2 Chronicles, it appears that Joash is actually even somewhat unhappy with the pace that Jehoiada had set for the repairs to the temple. All of this sounds very good. Jehoiada lived to be 130 years old as the high priest. And then Jehoiada died. When he died, the people honored him as though he had been a king. He was buried among the kings of Judah. But then 2 Chronicles 24 and verse 17 tells us that after the death of Jehoiada, the princes of Judah came and paid homage to the king, Joash, Then the king listened to them. And once again, things change in the kingdom. Because now Joash is influenced by these princes of Judah to do wickedness, and he begins to worship various false gods, engages in idolatry. God sent prophets. God sent, in fact, a prophet by the name of Zechariah. Zechariah was the son of Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat. And Zechariah preached to the people that God was going to punish them for the idolatry that they were engaging in. And Joash the king ordered his execution. They stoned him in the court of the temple. Later on, Joash would be wounded in battle, and he himself would be assassinated, murdered by some of his servants, a couple of his servants, and then, of course, his son would take over the throne. I'm going to spend just a moment or two kind of rehearsing some of this, and you'll understand the purpose why in just a moment. I want you to see the genealogy that's going on here. I mentioned before that Ahab and Jezebel were the parents of Athaliah. Ahab, of course, was a wicked king of the northern kingdom. Jezebel was his Phoenician queen. And their daughter, Athaliah, was married into the family of Jehoshaphat. She married Jehoram. Jehoram died, and when he died, Ahaziah, his son, becomes the next king. Now that's where we picked up earlier. We said that Ahaziah had actually gone to the north to visit a different Jehoram. It's not this Jehoram here. And while he's in the northern kingdom, he is assassinated by Jehu. And so now Athaliah, over here, kills all of the sons of Ahaziah except Joash, or as he sometimes called, Jehoash. Joash's life is saved by a woman by the name of Jehoshaphat. She is actually the sister of the king, Ahaziah, who has just been assassinated by Jehu. And her husband is Jehoiada. He's the high priest. And they have a son. His name is Zechariah. He's the one who was stoned in the temple courtyard. What I want you to see is that Joash engineers or commands the death of his own cousin under the influence of these princes of Judah and other wicked individuals. Well, I want to make some observations about Joash and influence in general, just four of them. The first one, and this stands out, I think, clearly in just the story that we've seen so far, and that is that Joash did what was right. As long as Jehoiada the high priest, a very good man, was alive and was exerting good influence on Jehoash. In fact, that's the passage we read in 2 Chronicles 24 and verse 2. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. But you know, the interesting thing about this is that Joash didn't choose Jehoiada as an influence. Jehoiada and his wife Jehoshaphat had been the couple that had spirited the infant away and hid him in the temple, responsible for his life being saved. And then later on, he's made king when he's 7 years old. Jehoiada, I'm certain, continued to be a source of good influence for Joash. But Joash didn't choose that influence. He kind of inherited it, if you know what I mean. I think his moral convictions for good were not very strong. Because when Jehoiada died later on, he fell under the influence of some other individuals. They're described as the princes of Judah. And his moral strength, his moral convictions, his faith in God was unequal to the strength of the evil influences that he let enter his life. He was the king. He could make the decisions about where the nation was going to go. But he listened, it says, he listened to the princes of Judah. And so he chose that influence. He didn't choose the influence of Jehoiada, but he chose the bad influence later on that led him off into idolatry and the rest of the nation apparently as well. Interesting observations about Joash and influence, the subject of influence, and I think there are some things that probably will help us in this story as we deal with the influences that we face in our lives, in our world. The first thing I want to point out is that although the moral quality of society fluctuates from time to time, I think in our own country at least, there have been times when our society has been more conservative than it is now, perhaps, and other times maybe when not so conservative. But regardless, we are not the first generation that has had to face many bad influences. I'm reminded of what the Lord said about Noah's generation in Genesis 6 and verse 5. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. That's how Moses summarized the condition of humanity in the time of Noah. Of all the people who lived, and it's hard to know what the population was, but it was probably fairly large due to the length of time that people lived and the length of time that they've continued to procreate. And so of all those people, only one family is saved. Can you imagine Noah and his family living in the midst of all of that? We don't need to feel like we're the Lone Ranger when we face evil influences in our society, in our time. Well, maybe it got better later. Not if you read what Paul had to say in Romans chapter 1 about the condition of Gentile society. Not when you read about the idolatry and the various practices that were associated with Old Testament and New Testament idolatry, the human sacrifices and the sexual sins, the immorality and the homosexuality that was rampant in Gentile society. That's the society that the early Christians lived in. Those are the influences they faced as they tried to live godly lives. I'm not saying it's easy in our day. I believe that there are some influences, some temptations that have been heightened in our technological age. But brethren, we are not alone in facing bad influences. And that's something to remember as we struggle with sometimes the influences that we face. Influence is going to happen. It is virtually impossible for us to avoid being influenced by others. Now, I think you can do that if you can find maybe 100 acres or a couple 100 acres off in some wilderness someplace, and you stay by yourself and you don't have any contact with the rest of humanity. Maybe you can avoid some of that influence, but most of us aren't going to do that, are we? And so we're going to be influenced by others. And in fact, we are going to likewise have influence with others. Lot was a righteous man, Peter says in 2 Peter 2. In fact, he calls him righteous or uses that word 3 times in 2 Peter 2 to describe Lot. That's really not the picture we get from Genesis chapter 19, where Lot is in the city of Sodom living there, and he offers his 2 daughters to the men at the door of his house who are wanting to abuse the guests in his house. We kind of look at that and say, well, I don't know, why would he do that? But Peter says he was a righteous man who was vexed by the things that he was observing in Sodom. And I'll tell you what, he should have put his house up for sale. Because his family was affected by the influence of Sodom. You remember, he lost his wife. They were leaving, and the Lord's instructions were don't look back. She's walking behind him. I don't know if you've ever noticed that in the text. She is walking behind him, and she looks back, and she dies. It is amazing that Lot didn't look back to see what happened to his wife. But the Lord had said, don't look back. He lost his wife. He essentially lost his daughters. They have been so influenced by the moral turpitude of Sodom that they end up getting their father drunk and they end up committing incest with their father to continue the genealogical line. He lost his family, I think, to the influence of Sodom. Not only will we be influenced, but we will influence others. And that's why I believe Paul wrote in Romans 14 and verse 13, "Therefore, let us not pass judgment on one another any longer, but rather decide not to place a stumbling block or hindrance in the way of a brother." It's possible for us to be a bad influence on someone else, to put a stumbling block before them so that they end up falling into sin. Influence is going to happen. But how far is it going to go? You know, that's the amazing thing about influence. We just don't know how far each of us, as far as our personal influence, our individual influence, how far that's going to go. You can probably list the people that you have contact with. In an average week, the people that you associate with on a regular basis, you could probably add another layer of people that you do business with, maybe not a whole lot of influence there, but you're going to have some contact with them. What you don't know is what contact those people have with others and how you have influenced them, and they may influence others in turn. And you don't know, I don't know, who's watching me that I'm unaware of. Each of us lives in kind of a network. Our age, you know, there was a time when you said network and people wouldn't know what you're talking about. But now everybody knows what a network is, right? It's a bunch of constituent elements that are joined in various ways. And so we live in these networks of people of influence. And I have influence on others and they have influence in turn on others, and it goes more than one direction. It comes back to me. Influence carries from one person to another, to another, to another. And people are watching you. And they are noticing what you do. And how you talk. And how you dress. You may not have the opportunity to influence certain people ever again. And that means that we need to be extremely careful about our influence on a daily basis, because we never know when we're going to have a contact, some contact with somebody that may change the direction of that person's life. Hopefully for good. Maybe for evil. We need to choose our influences as much as possible. Now I understand that particularly for young people, we don't get to choose our influence. Joash didn't choose Jehoiada. He got chosen by Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat. They grabbed him and they spirited him off into the temple. And for the rest of Jehoiada's life, Joash and Jehoiada are pretty much going to be connected. There's going to be influence there. And it was good influence for Joash. And we don't choose our parents. We don't choose our siblings. We don't choose our neighbors, for young people, a lot of times. We're kind of in a life where there are a lot of influences on us, and we didn't choose those influences. But you know, at some point, you start to choose your own influences. You determine who your friends are. You determine who it is that you spend time with. You determine what kind of music you listen to. You determine what kind of books you read. You determine what kind of movies you watch. And we need to choose good influences as much as we can. I understand that even as adults, we really don't get to choose all the influences that affect us or could affect us. We're on the job and we don't get to choose who's going to work beside us or who we come in contact with the job. Sometimes we have no control over that. And many cases, those are bad influences. People who don't share our moral convictions. There's not a lot we can do about that. Sometimes we belong to social groups, whether they're athletic or other kinds of groups, and we don't get to determine all those kinds of influences. But I'll tell you what, we can deliberately choose to associate with those who will be a good influence on us, and we can be reminded of the bad influence that other people represent. We need to think about that. In Proverbs chapter 22, verses 24 and 25, this is just an example. It's just a passage that illustrates the principle that we're going to be influenced by other people and those that we spend time with. The writer says, make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. If you go with him, if you make friendship with him, in other words, you're going to spend time with him, you're going to associate with him, guess what? He's going to influence you. And it is arrogant on our part to think that we are so strong that it doesn't make any difference what we listen to, who we spend time with, what we watch. Paul said, those of you who think you stand, you need to take heed lest you fall. We need to be careful about that kind of influence and choose with deliberation who it is we're going to spend time with. And when you see people who are good influences, moral, godly people, people that are in this congregation, then you need to try to spend time with those people, if you can, as much as you can. The people of Israel were forbidden to intermarry with the nations, particularly those in Canaan. Turn, if you will, back to Deuteronomy, the 7th chapter. We could probably reproduce this same reading in Exodus chapter 34, but we'll just read a little bit here in the first few verses of Deuteronomy chapter 7. I'm going to begin reading in verse 1, and I'm reading from the ESV. When the Lord your God brings you into the land that you are entering to take possession of it, and clears away many nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations more numerous and mightier than yourselves. And when the Lord your God gives them over to you and you defeat them, then you must devote them to complete destruction. You shall make no covenant with them and show no mercy to them. You shall not intermarry with them, giving your daughters to their sons or taking their daughters for your sons, for they would turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. Then the anger of the Lord would be kindled against you, and he would destroy you quickly. But thus shall you deal with them. You shall break down their altars and dash in pieces their pillars and chop down their Asherim and burn their carved images with fire. Why? So that there's no temptation to use them, to follow them. You don't intermarry with them because that's a relationship that will cause you to be pulled away from the Lord. Now there's an important principle there about choosing who will influence us. Young people, as you date, as you consider spending time, perhaps the rest of your life with somebody in the marital relationship, you need to choose carefully so that whoever you choose ends up being a good influence on you and not somebody who will drag you down, spiritually speaking. And then the last thought for this morning. We don't become immune to bad influences just because we get older, or influences with time tend to become less potent. We have to continue to pay attention to those things and those people who influence us. And I can't think of a better illustration of that principle than King Solomon. From the reading that was read by Patrick earlier, King Solomon loved a lot of foreign women. And so all these women turned him away from the Lord. You shall not, the Lord had said to the people of Israel, you shall not enter into marriage with them, neither shall you they with you, for surely they will turn away your heart after these gods. And Solomon didn't listen. He clung to them in love, and he ends up building. Listen, this is the king who built the temple to the Lord, and ends up building temples to false gods, some of whom were worshipped with human sacrifice just on the other side of the valley from the temple. Can you believe that? And what it says is, You are never too old to make a fool of yourself. I think Joash, as we studied a little bit earlier, was another example of the same principle. Think of all the years, perhaps. We don't really have a good chronology here that I'm aware of. How many years Jehoiada was influencing Joash for good, and he was doing good things, and he brought the nation really away from Baal worship and back to the worship of the Lord. And then Jehoiada dies. Why didn't Joash just continue in his same conduct? Well, I think he was easily influenced. That's another lesson. But the time that he had spent doing good didn't keep him from doing evil later. And so we need to be careful that even if we're starting well, even if our families are, we're trying to make sure we've got good influences in our families and we're trying to influence us, we need to be careful that at some point we don't let our guard down and we end up like Solomon, who in his old age ends up leaving the Lord, worshiping other gods. For many years, I don't know exactly how many years, Mary Mallon, typhoid Mary, lived to be 69, but the last 23 years of her life, she wasn't allowed out in among people. She was isolated. But for a number of years, those who came in contact with typhoid Mary, they didn't realize the effect that she was having on their health. And some of them died physically as a result of that. Children, others. Have you ever had this experience? You go out someplace, maybe for a couple days or something, and you come back to your house, and you can smell odors in your house that you couldn't smell before. Just all of a sudden, it's like, wow, we must have dogs. Because I can smell dogs. You know what happens to us? The more our olfactory nerves are exposed to certain odors, we become desensitized to those odors, at least in a temporary time. And we don't realize it anymore. When you first smell something strong, it really affects you. But after a while, it becomes less and less obvious until eventually we can walk into our houses or be in our houses and we don't smell the odors that other people can come in. I'm making everybody nervous, Anna, aren't I? Everybody's going to go home and get the Febreze out, you know. I don't know what I'm smelling. I'm not smelling anything, but I don't want anybody else. But you know what I'm saying is true. And that's how influence works too. What happens is, in the beginning, we may be very cognizant, very aware of the fact that we're being influenced by this. This is a bad influence. But you know, over time, we get used to it and it doesn't bother us as much. Or maybe we reason that it's not as serious as we thought, and pretty soon we just don't worry about it at all. And it'll kill you. Just like typhoid Mary was responsible for the deaths of lots of other people. We don't know how many people. So I got a couple questions I want to ask you. First of all, who's influencing you? Think about your life and your daily activities, who your friends are, and what you listen to, and what you watch, and what you read, and where you go. Who is influencing you, and is that good influence? Are they a good influence? Are those things a good influence on you? How are you being influenced by the world around you? Maybe not so much close contact or immediate contact, physical contact, but the things that are going on, how are they influencing us? We're in a struggle to keep our minds pure. And so what we need to do is choose to be influenced by the right things, by the right people. Paul said it this way. We studied this recently in the adult class, Philippians 4 and verse 8. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, pure, lovely, commendable, if there's any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Let those things influence you. And that's how influence works. In Romans 12 and verse 2, Paul said, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. by the renewal of your mind. I keep going New King James Version. That by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Have you ever thought about that? The renewal of your mind? You control that. So do I. I control the renewal of my mind. I choose what comes in and whether I continue to let it come in. And we can choose to renew our minds with good influences and not bad influences. Those who had become sick by contact with Typhoid Mary needed to be treated. Unfortunately, some of them didn't realize how sick they were until it was too late. And so they died. And in 1920s and 30s, we didn't have the same kind of medicine or capabilities that we have now. And so sometimes, maybe people couldn't have been saved. I don't know. But I will tell you this, that those who have become stained with sin through contact with the world need to be washed in the blood of the Lamb. And the Lord's healing, the healing of the great physician, is complete. And it is certain when we will avail ourselves of what God has provided. If you find yourself stained by the influences of the world and your submission to those things, then why not this morning be cleansed, free from all of the blemishes of sin, through the forgiveness that's available in Christ? Not when you believe, that's important. Not when you repent, we're going to talk about repentance probably a week or so from now. Genuine repentance. Not when we confess, all those things are necessary, but it's when we're baptized, when we are buried with Christ, that we are washed by the blood that Tim talked about this morning, the sacrifice that was made for us. If you need to respond to the invitation this morning, please don't stop. If you're here, you're ready to confess, don't stop here. Go ahead and obey the Lord completely. And we stand to invite you as we sing.